United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Environment and faith is our topic today. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores with our guest, the Reverend Gilson Waldkoenig, who is the Paulson Hale Maurer Professor of Church in Society and Director of the Town and Country Institute at United Lutheran Seminary, especially on the Gettysburg campus. So having that title, how does it work out? How do you do environment studies in this position?
Well, thank you very much for talking with me today and having me. And there's actually a historical fit and a very natural fit. The Gettysburg side of the United Lutheran Seminary had rural ministry courses ever since 1918. And then around in the 60s, I figured, Professor Russell Hale was teaching the rural ministry courses and started to include issues about Appalachia and strip mining and water quality and pollution and things like that. And so then it was 1994 that my predecessor in the Town and Country Church Institute, Jack Rogers, got together with Bill Avery, and they put together a course called Stewardship and Ecology. And so then it went to another level where ecology and environment mm-hmm. were in the curriculum per se in a course title. But really the roots go back into our concern for rural ministry and our Appalachian region that we serve. So we come by it honest here, and it's never been a fad, really, here. It's always been a deep concern related to the churches and the communities that they're in.
The unusual thing about this seminary probably is that they called a woman, but it's not unusual, and I mean that as a salute to this seminary, well before others were doing it. And it's not so unusual, however, that there is a person in Town and Country, or whatever it happens to be now, Professor of Church in Society, because you're saying that goes back to the beginnings of the last century.
Oh, it does. And Bertha Paulson, who you mentioned,
the first
woman called to a Lutheran seminary in North America, and we happen to know only the second tenured woman in theological education in the United States mm-hmm. at the time when she became tenured in, 1945 or something.
And guess what she was teaching?
She was teaching in this area.
Yes.
And she continued Town and Country Church alongside Urban Church. And for a while, this school actually, Harvey Hoover was the one who started rural sociology in 1918. And then he kept going, and he overlapped with Bertha for a few years, actually. So you had a rural church course, and you also had Bertha's Town and Country Church. Bertha, of course, took it to another level with the deeper sociology. But she was the only other tenured woman in North America at that time was Georgia Harkness.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, there's a name to be reckoned with.
Yeah. So Bertha was really important.
Well, our theme then is that this is not a fad. It's not, and it didn't arise just in the last few years when we seem to become conscious of ecology. There's always been an issue to address. But still we haven't said, why is it important?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, in the public realm, it's now the public political issue, public global issues. The Conference of Parties meets on a regular basis to consider the health of the climate, and everyone is well acquainted with the fact that the United States of America was a responsible partner regarding the climate until the current administration threw it off and pulled us back out. And that's just out of step where the global church has been. The Lutheran World Federation in particular, to which this school belongs to the Lutheran World Federation by affiliation, and they have been very responsible partners, attending all the Conference of Parties related to climate, and really put forward been part of the ecumenical witness of the church mm-hmm. for the health of the planet amid the climate issues. So the climate is one huge area where it's publicly important, it's globally important, it's our future. I mean, everybody knows about Greta Thunberg, the child who, you know, led all the other children to go on a massive strike and stay out of school one day. And those sorts. So climate's one massive public issue. Another reason, though, that ecology is important is that people understand now that food and health are interrelated, and there's a great deal of interest secularly as well as religiously in food and health, and so environment is embedded in all of those issues as well. And really the third area where the ecology or environment is very publicly important and important also to the churches is that our non-human neighbors are all the species that are around us. We're losing species left and right. We're in massive die-off of different species. We're losing the rainforests. We're losing habitats all around us. And so, you know, not so long ago, we thought environmental issues were just picking up litter and trying to clear the smoke off of the top of Pittsburgh, right? But now we realize this is interrelated with everything, with our future, with our present, with our food, with our own health.
And population growth is behind a lot of...
Population is very
interesting. Especially habitat destruction.
Very, very interesting. I'm not ready to say that the human species is a curse on the earth, or that we're a parasite. I'm not going to go there for theological reasons. However, we are in an unprecedented period. At 1900, the estimated population of the world was 6.1 billion. I mean 1.6 billion. By 2000, it was 6.1 billion. Today, we're on our way to 8 billion.
Mm-hmm. While we're in this, I want to get back to these major issues. That spells out exactly where we are today. And we'll want to ask about especially what we can do about it, and we're particularly interested in what churches can do about it on the local level. When we think of the global things, we think, oh boy, we're never going to be able to address them. They're so large. Mm-hmm. But we've skipped over something very important. That is, we started talking about how there's been a development of consciousness in this one small town rural church. But there was also something going on at the beginning of the last century. There was a Liberty Hyde Bailey and a book called The Holy Earth, which is as early as 1915. Was that the very, very beginning of this consciousness, or?
Well, consciousness goes back further than that, but I've been privileged and delighted to do a little bit of research on Liberty Hyde Bailey's religion, because right now, as we're speaking in this time, scholars are starting to rediscover this Liberty Hyde Bailey. And unlike some other people who were famous for standing up for the environment, like John Muir, for instance, who became disaffected from his childhood Christian roots, Liberty Hyde Bailey never threw off the church, and he never considered the church an enemy of the environment or an enemy of caring for the world. Now, he was very liberal, and I don't share all the same theological views that he had, but he had a deep appreciation for the church, and particularly the rural church, because he thought these are the people who are right there on the ground to take care of the land. So in 1915, he wrote a book called The Holy Earth, which is now being rediscovered as one of those early eco-theology type pieces.
What in your view, and in Bailey's view, what are the main theological impulses? What are the words? The main theological points that relate to ecology. God so loved the world, for example, to be very, very innocuous in general. But where are we with the approach to ecology?
Bailey didn't use the word vocation, but it's really about vocation. I mean, he talked about vocation of the farmer, and then also of the rural citizen, and all the citizens. It's called people to be citizens of the world, to be citizens of the environment that gives us life. And the reason he called the earth holy is because he said, you know, this is where we got to know everything that we know. Mm-hmm. And he was an early adopter of evolution, like his mentor Asa Gray, the great scientist at Harvard. These guys accepted Darwin completely, but said, but it doesn't have to mean that there's a bad end to all of this, or that we all have to, you know, kill each other or die in the environment. You know, there could be a good purpose. They would say, we have to wait and see, because we don't have all the evidence yet. But so theologically, I think that it's very helpful to reorient to, why are we here? What do we know about ourselves? And we have a good purpose to act on. Faith is to go ahead and go in that direction of good purpose. And faith isn't to have some answer about how everything's going to turn out at the end and sit in judgment of everyone else and of how things are going. I mean, we do have to make judgments, but we have to be humble about what our judgments are. The big judgment is in somebody else's hands, and it's out at the end, and we don't have the data on that yet. We do have data that we have many good things to do here. So Bailey was a gardener, and before he was the professor of horticulture at Cornell University, and he founded the agricultural college at Cornell University. But he came up through gardening, and he would cultivate plants and take care of them, and then he would see improvements in those plants. So he got excited about that, and he associated that with these kinds of developments like descent with modification and so forth that are in Darwin. And he said, well, if you can see good developments in little things that you can do in your garden, can't there be good developments in the whole scheme of evolution as well? And so while a lot of people were recognizing all the violence in evolution and death, he would say, yeah, but also there are species learning to help each other. And there's adaptation, so that there's a kind of neighborliness. He called it otherism. So I'll stop talking about Bailey here with this, but he even got to the point where he said what Darwin did is he decentered the human being from the middle of creation, that everything wasn't for us, and really showed us that we're supposed to serve here, because we're supposed to be other-oriented, and we're supposed to help everybody around us to adapt and survive. And that's in evolution. That's embedded in evolution. So these guys were the minority, though.
Yes.
Bailey and his mentor Asa Gray, and Darwin himself, of course, everybody knows, took a pessimistic view in the end. That's an interesting and complicated subject. But he had some hard things happen in his life. But it's part of why I would not say that we're doomed, even though we have a lot of environmental problems. We're not doomed. We don't know that yet.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about faith and ecology, or faith and environment, with Dr. Gilson Wahlkoenig, who is the Paulson Hale Maurer Professor of Church and Society and Director of the Town and Country Church Institute at United Lutheran Seminary. I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explorers. We're glad you joined us today, because we now want to ask about questions of what can we do about faith and ecology, especially for small groups, congregations, community organizations. You know, the issues seem to be so global, so monumental, that you kind of sit down, O men of faith, or people of faith, instead of rise up, O men of faith, right? Sit down. There's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. Not so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes. Right here in our area, in Lancaster County, there's a place called the Whittle Farm that belongs to the Lutheran Camping Corporation of Central Pennsylvania. And the Lower Susquehanna Synod and the Lutheran Camping Corporation are supporting a ministry that's happening at Whittle Farm. Pastor Matt Lenihan, who's a graduate of our seminary here and a pastor in the Synod, he's leading this project. It's called the Growing Project. And they're growing vegetables. And this is the third summer, or maybe the fourth summer. And they are just expanding. I think they've got 9 acres in production this year. They've got approval to go up to 40 acres eventually. All this free food is going to the needy in Lancaster. Ironically, Lancaster County is the most food insecure county in Pennsylvania. The breadbasket.
The historical breadbasket. The focus of paradise and the other places that the Amish came to settle in because it was paradise.
So church groups are going out to help. They help plant, they help pick, but not just church groups. All kinds of different groups are coming in to the Whittle Farm, and Matt Lenihan shows them how to take care in order to help their neighbor. This is the food and faith thing that I mentioned, or the food and health thing that I mentioned as among the major issues. When people come, they get a chance to participate. Their good work, vocation, goes to someone else's benefit right in front of their eyes. It's fantastic, the kind of goodwill that's generating around the Whittle Farm. But it's the goodwill is first, and then, oh, Pastor Lenihan, why are you doing this? Why is Lutheran Church involved with this? And then you can have some discussions about why we're here, why the church is here, what this is about. So it's the neighbor first, and then what we're interested in getting across.
The foundations of faith, yeah. Then follow in.
But the foundations are clear, and the theology is rich and deep. So that's one thing. That's food and faith things are all over this country right now. I can call me. I can point you. It's taken off like crazy.
Well, we did gleaning in this county just this last Sunday. That's another.
That's right.
A way of using food that would otherwise go to waste.
Excellent. That's right. Yeah. On the climate front, there are the great big things to do. Like I mentioned, getting involved with the Lutheran Rural Federation or our synods and our church, national churches that are making a witness as far as public policy goes, but also just right in your building. We have a graduate named Tormod Svensson, Pastor Tormod Svensson, he's now a pastor in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, but he's been in a couple different parishes. When he gets to his church, he does an energy audit. You know, maybe turning the thermostat, changing a few lights, save a few thousand dollars. Pastor, thanks for saving us a few thousand dollars. We're going to squirrel this away into the bank. No, he says, no, we're going to turn it to the next thing. And I mean, he served in South Cumberland and one of the poorest spots in Maryland. Every Saturday, there's a little farmer's market that just that church did for the poorest section of South Cumberland, because he started by saving them thousands of dollars in their building. Now, he's got the background and know-how to do that. But we can get you in touch with people that can help you. And so your money doesn't just have to go through the roof. And then when you save a little bit, you can turn it to your neighbor. And all of that does count towards improving the climate and making sure that we don't continue this pattern of destructiveness in this planet. Then third, in the species and habitat, there's all kinds of things that churches have been doing. Some churches have land. Some churches are in the watershed. They've got water, or they know that they're related to the water. We have a graduate named Kyle.
You'll think of it.
Yeah, I just forgot his last name for a second here. He did a project where he assessed the church's water runoff. And all the damage that was going to the bay, the Chesapeake Bay, because of that, you know, calculated how could we change this by having, they have a lot of acreage. And so it's a little bit of change in terms of some gardens and some green area to pick it up. But they couldn't do it all right away. You got to plan that into your church budget. It's going to take a few years. What could they do right away? Well, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation offers that you can buy oysters. You can buy oysters to go into the bay. Because when oysters get repopulate the bay, mm-hmm. it cleans the bay. Mm-hmm. So Kyle sat down and calculated how many oysters do we have to buy to offset our pollution that we're doing. That was like $25, but it was cute. He said, these are oyster offsets. Oyster offsets. And we should laugh at it. That was the whole point. Mm-hmm. Because his job at the church is to reach out to the unchurched, reach out to the non-Christian people. And here comes this church with a cute approach, oyster offsets, with humility and humor about how limited we are. Church doesn't have it all right, and we're just as bad as sinners as everybody else. You know, but we're acknowledging part of our sin, that we're polluters, and we want to do something about it. We're the church that's starting with oyster offsets, and we have every intention of addressing this in a more sustainable way going forward. I think that's a tremendous witness. And it shows the vibrancy that this kind of work could have in meeting our neighbors who maybe don't know anything about the church.
Our topic today is ecology and faith, environment and faith. And our guest, the Reverend Dr. Gilson Wall-Koenig, the Paulson Hale Maurer Professor of Church and Society and Director of the Town and Country Institute at United Lutheran Seminary. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.